While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Good afternoon, Namibia and the world at large. This is On the Reading News Analysis on Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and today is Friday, the 19th of June, 2026. As Namibia concludes another eventful week, the conversations shaping our nation continue to evolve across government, business, communities, and international platforms. Important decisions are being made that will influence economic growth, public service delivery, investment, governance, and the quality of life of all Namibians. Now, this afternoon, we take a closer look at the developments making headlines across the country and beyond, from economic performance and infrastructure development to youth empowerment, job creation, and regional growth. We examine the stories that matter and the issues driving national discussion. Now, today's program, we explore how Namibia is positioning itself in a rapidly changing world. As global markets shift, technology advances, and new opportunities emerge across sectors such as energy, mining, agriculture, tourism, fisheries, and digital innovation, the country continues to navigate both opportunities and challenges in pursuit of sustainable development. We also focus on the issues affecting communities on the ground: access to quality education, healthcare services, housing, water, electricity, and economic opportunities remain at the center of public concern. Now, across Namibia's regions, citizens are looking for practical solutions that improve livelihoods and create a better future for generations to come. At the same time, regional leadership remains under the spotlight as governors continue delivering their State of the Region address. Now, beyond Namibia's borders, the global landscape continues to shift. Geopolitical developments, changing trade dynamics, climate challenges, technological transformation, and the growing influence of artificial intelligence are reshaping societies and economies worldwide. Now, understanding these changes is essential as Namibia seeks to strengthen its competitiveness and secure long-term prosperity. Now, right here on the Reading News Analysis, we believe the news should do more than inform. It should provide context, encourage critical thinking, and help audience understand how local, regional, and global developments are connected. Our commitment is to go beyond the headlines, ask the important questions, examine the facts, and explore the perspectives changing the world around us. And as always, we thank you for making us part of your afternoon. Whether you are listening from home, the office, on the road, or online, we appreciate your company and your engagement. So stay with us as we unpack today's biggest stories, analyze the issues behind the news, and bring you the insights that matter. Now let's get right in today's news analysis. The Communications Regulatory Authority of Namibia, CREAN, has released its quarterly statistics bulletin for January to March 2026, highlighting continued growth and modernization within Namibia's communications sector. The report points to sustained broadband expansion, stronger cyber resilience, increased infrastructure investment, and broader access to communication services across the country. Now, according to the latest statistics, fixed broadband subscriptions increased by 5% during the first quarter of 2026, that is rising from 133,255 in the previous quarter to 139,584 subscriptions. Fiber connectivity remained the main driver of growth, recording a 10% increase as demanded for higher speed and reliable internet services continued to grow among households and businesses. Now, while active SIM card subscriptions recorded a slight decline of 2%, decreasing from 2.788 million to 2,746 million, mobile broadband usage remained robust. Now, the report shows that 64% of active SIM card accessed internet services during the reporting period. reflecting the continued importance of mobile connectivity in Namibia's digital landscape. Mobile internet consumption also maintained an upward trend, increasing by 6% as compared to the previous quarter. Now, social media platforms remain among the leading drivers of data usage, with TikTok registering a 7% increase, while Facebook and YouTube each recorded growth of 5%. Now, the bulletin further indicates that mobile voice traffic remained relatively stable, while SMS usage increased significantly by 14%, highlighting the continued reliance or relevance of messaging services alongside database communication platforms. Namibia had also recorded positive development in cybersecurity during the quarter. Cyber threat events declined by 47%, while reported and detected cyber vulnerabilities decreased by 31%. CREN attributed this improvement to ongoing efforts aimed at strengthening cyber resilience, increasing awareness, and enhancing response mechanisms across the country's digital ecosystem. Now, investment in the telecommunications sector saw substantial growth, doubling to $411 million during the reporting period. Now, the increase is said to have been largely driven by network expansion projects, infrastructure upgrades, and initiatives reported by the Universal Service Fund, which seeks to improve connectivity in underserved and rural communities. Now, commenting on the findings, CREN's Executive for Communication and Consumer Relations, Mufaro Nesiongano, said the latest figures demonstrate the sector's continued role in driving digital transformation in Namibia. And I quote, "The latest statistics show that Namibia's communication sector remains a key enabler of digital transformation. Growth in broadband connectivity, sustained mobile data demand, and increased infrastructure investment demonstrate a sector that is adapting to the needs of consumers, of businesses, and communities," Nesongano said. Now, the broadcasting sector delivered mixed results during the quarter. Pay TV subscriptions increased by 2%, largely driven by growth in satellite television services. However, total broadcasting revenue declined by 7%, while advertising revenue dropped by 18% compared to the previous quarter. I might be wondering, and I'm sure most of people might know, total broadcasting revenue declining by 7% could be attributed to social media platforms such as Netflix. People are able to now watch online as opposed to the usual broadcasting way. And advertising revenue, people also lately advertising through social media as opposed to traditional way. But then the other thing is that, you know, always this is where also convergence comes in, which I've spoken about here on the Reader News Analysis. We should not undermine the impact of traditional media, as radio still also remains very significant and one of the biggest form of transmission of either news or information or whatsoever. We should not undermine that. Therefore, working side by side, which is convergent, working side by side with traditional media and latest perhaps social media, would very much be advised. Meanwhile, the postal sector recorded a notable progress with 9 new post offices established during the quarter, all located in rural areas. Now, as a result, 84% of Namibia's postal establishments are now situated in rural communities, strengthening universal access to postal services across the country. CREN says it remains committed to promoting a secure, innovative, and inclusive communication sector that supports Namibia's development objectives and advances the country's digital future. Let's now take a listen to the Communications Regulatory Authority's spokesperson, that is being Mufaro Nesongano.
The Communications Regulatory Authority of Namibia, CREN, has released its quarterly statistics bulletin for the first quarter of 2026, highlighting continued growth and investment across the communications sector. Fixed broadband subscriptions increased by 5%, with fiber services recording a strong 10% growth as more Namibians demand faster and more reliable internet connectivity. Mobile data usage also increased by 6%, driven largely by platforms such as TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube. The report further shows encouraging progress in cybersecurity, with cyber threat events declining by 47% and reported vulnerabilities decreasing by 31% during the quarter. Telecommunications investment doubled to over 411 million Namibian dollars, supporting network expansion and connectivity projects, particularly in underserved and rural communities. The postal sector also expanded, with 9 new rural post offices established, further improving access to communication services across the country. The full quarterly statistic bulletin is available on our website at cran.na.
And now let's pause right here shortly. Make room for a scheduled commercial break. We'll be back shortly to interrogate this further. Please do stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. Uh-huh. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to be part of it.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
Okay, let's now hear from Tanya Hopker, cybersecurity awareness expert. A very good afternoon to you, Tanya Hopker, and it's a pleasure to have you with me on the Reading News Analysis.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Mm. Now, the Communications Regulatory Authority of Namibia recently reported that cyber threat events have dropped by 47% and cyber vulnerabilities by 31% in the first quarter of 2026. Now, that sounds like a massive improvement. Is Namibia suddenly much safer? Why should we be cautious about this? Is Namibia suddenly much safer?
It's encouraging news, and any reduction in cyber threats is, of course, a positive message. However, we need to be careful not to jump to the conclusion that Namibia is suddenly 47% safer.
Mm-hmm.
The report tells us what the number of detected or reported threats and vulnerabilities are, and that it's decreased. It's an important indicator, but it's really only part of the overall cybersecurity picture.
Mm-hmm. Now, why should we be cautious about those numbers? A 47% reduction sounds huge.
So context matters in cybersecurity. Well, we need to understand exactly what's being measured and how it's being done, right? Are these threats detected by internet providers? Are they reported by organizations? How are they collected? You know, different sources can produce very different results. And of course, the trend is positive, but numbers alone don't really tell us whether the attackers are less active or whether organizations are simply detecting and preventing more attacks before they become incidents.
Mm-hmm. So then what should businesses take away from the statistics?
So, of course, the statistics are encouraging, but businesses should not see them as a reason to lower their guard or think that the risk has gone away. Cybersecurity threats continue to evolve, and attackers are constantly looking for new ways to get in, new opportunities, new little paths into your business, you know. The takeaway should be that cybersecurity remains an important topic in organizations,
mm-hmm.
and that organizations need to continuously still be investing in both technology and their people, because the trends change, the attackers change, it's not going away. This is something that's here, mm-hmm. and it is a topic that's going to stay. So businesses really need to face the reality that it is now a responsibility of theirs to keep their business alive.
While we're still on that, what are the biggest cyber risks that are facing Namibian businesses in this day and era?
So we're seeing one of the biggest risks to businesses remains phishing emails. So business email compromise, and then, of course, along with that, we're seeing a lot of ransomware. In Namibia, of course, we still have a lot of weak passwords, social engineering attacks. But the point is, for businesses, there really is a lot of phishing going on. And so that's essentially when a scam email or phishing email comes into an employee's inbox, and it tricks them into clicking on a link or entering their credentials, and all of a sudden you've opened the door for the hacker to come in the business. And the thing is, most successful attacks don't begin with very sophisticated hacking, where they just go after the IT system.
Okay.
Most attacks actually begin with someone clicking a malicious link. It's the person who's received the attack. They've been manipulated. They click on the link, and that's how you open the door to the hackers getting into the business.
Sure. Interesting. Now, we often hear that people are the weakest link in cybersecurity. Is that really true?
Yes, it is, in fact. So depending on the statistics you look at, up to 95% of attacks actually involve a human interaction. And, you know, the software that's been created these days is created by professionals. But the thing is that we as a user still need to enter a good password. And are we entering a good password, or are we reusing our birthday, you know? And when we get a phishing email, we cannot, no email filter in the world will be able to make sure that all phishing emails stay out of the business. So it is going to be up to the user, the person behind the computer, to look at that phishing email and to be able to identify whether it's a phishing email or not. And unfortunately, you know, technology can be programmed, it can evolve very quickly, but us as humans, we need to be trained. That's how we upgrade our software. And we need to be aware of the tactics of how these hackers trick us. So we need that software update. And, you know, I'm pretty sure most people are not doing that. So, yes, humans really do remain the weakest link.
I see. Now, what with that being said, that human beings are the weakest link in cybersecurity, why is it that cyber criminals actually target employees instead of the technology itself?
Yeah, so it's because it works. Employees have access to systems, data, money. You know, that's, we're working on the computers, and we have access to all of that intellectual property, and, you know, we have the ability to do money transfers, we log into the bank account, etc. So it's really about, and, you know, if you think about some of the tactics that they use, you see an email with, you've won a prize, just click on this link, provide your details, and we'll transfer you the money. And that's us getting excited about something. And then we click on a link, or we take action without thinking. Or it's a phone call from the bank, for example. That's another one. And they say, there's money going off your account. Please give me your banking information, and I'll be able to stop it, you know. And what happens there, they put you under time pressure.
Yeah.
They pretend to be someone from authority, and they make you scared. So they make you act very quickly. And when you do that, you act without thinking, and you take the wrong steps. So the thing is that people can actually be quite easily manipulated, and we can't be updated like technology.
Yeah, true. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what practical steps can businesses actually take in order to improve their cybersecurity?
Yeah, so there's a lot of steps that the everyday business can take without investing in a lot or hiring, you know, a sophisticated cybersecurity team. You know, you can start with a fundamental. So really, take your password seriously. Get a password manager where you can save lots of different passwords that are very long and very safe. And then use those passwords through your password manager. Enable multiple, multi-factor authentication. Make sure your systems are always updated. Make sure you have secure backups. And then train your employees regularly. It's really important to train your staff members who are working on email and working with your data on how they can identify and respond to incidents.
Now, with the release of this statistics, where does cybersecurity awareness training fit into all this? And also on that, is probably one cybersecurity training session per year enough for a company?
Yeah, so it's a good question, and I think I've touched on that a bit already.
Yeah.
But awareness training is one of the most effective investments that a business can actually make, because it's up to every single staff member to be behaving in a cyber secure way. Every single staff member needs to understand the risks, needs to understand they need to set that good password, what a good password is, what a phishing email is, you know, what sensitive data is, what private data is. And it's really once you've educated your staff members and they understand, they can start taking these actions in their everyday work to protect your business. So it's a really essential part. And one training session a year is definitely not enough. So when we do training, it's about training for education, but it's also about training for awareness. So if I do a session with you in January, by the time March runs by, comes by, or Easter comes by, you've forgotten. So it's about keeping it top of mind. And then in addition, you should really be testing your staff members with simulated phishing emails, right? So as a business owner, you would want to know how many of my staff members or how many phishing emails are being clicked on. You know, and when we do this with a business, you can easily see 16-20% of phishing emails are being clicked on. Then you need to train your staff, and you need to bring that number down as low as possible, and then you really have an impact.
Tanya, what does a strong cybersecurity culture look like?
Yeah, so a strong cybersecurity culture in a business is also essential to make all of this work. And it looks like management taking cybersecurity seriously. Your founders, you know, your owners, whoever they are, they take it seriously. It looks like talking about it in every single meeting. It looks like, you know, talking about it at tea breaks, putting it into your bonus structure, putting it into your warning or dismissal structure. You know, if you do cybersecurity awareness training as a program, but people don't attend, then they are a risk to the business. And the business, you know, you can't function like that. If you were a doctor and you missed your training, you can't practice. You know, you need a professional business. So it's really about making it a part of the everyday business.
Right. Okay. Tanya, with us being said on cybersecurity awareness and security, what would be your message to Namibian businesses out there, whether middle, huge, or perhaps even beginning ones at the beginning stage? What's your message to them?
I think our message would go directly to the SMEs. We have a lot of SMEs in Namibia, and SMEs tend to think that they are not at risk because they're too small for the hackers. They're not interesting for the hackers. But I have news, unfortunately. 85% of attacks actually target SMEs.
Wonderful.
And the hackers know that the SMEs earn some money. That's why they're around. Some of them good money. And they're small, so they don't necessarily have their own IT team, and they definitely, most likely, don't have their own cybersecurity function. So they are a weak link. And so I think my message would be, Namibian SMEs, you know, take this seriously. It affects you too. And, you know, I think 60% of SMEs that suffer a major breach go out of business within 6 months. So this is not an issue of it's an expense. It's an issue of you need to take care of this so your business continues.
Okay. I sure hope that as we bring this awareness, businesses will take into consideration, and also even us individual people, because I've come to realize people are not sensitive to clicking on random links. People send them links and then they're fast to so quickly click on it.
Yes, I think generally the public needs to be made more aware. And, you know, we help businesses, but when we help businesses and we train staff members, it's always very rewarding to know that each person we train is going to take that information home to their families, to their moms, to their aunties, and teach them about how to identify bad links, teach them about that hackers use to manipulate so that they can be more protected in the future.
Yeah. Tanya Hopka, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis. It's always a pleasure really engaging you on news like this.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Let's pause here now shortly. We'll be back still to continue discussing about this. Please stay tuned. Don't go anywhere.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa.
The wait is over. The deals are here. It's Big Red Weekend for 3 days only. ShopRite brings you massive savings of up to 50% off. Like a 4kg Real Good IQF chicken mixed portions. Only 200 Namibian dollars. 10kg Top Score Super Maize meal. Just 125 Namibian dollars. 500 grams Rama Original 70% fat spread. Only 25 Namibian dollars each. 450 grams Wheat Bix cereal. Buy two for just 50 Namibian dollars. Don't miss out. This weekend only, get up to 50% off. Valid until 21 June 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Okukwetera oipindi konu konda doyinawa. Nune udo, otukwetera o special angetashia kengejepa omarudini tayo loka.
And we are back, still discussing on this very interesting conversation. Joining me now on studio telephonically is Festus Helao Shatipamba. A very good afternoon to you, Festus. And before you actually greet the listeners as well, Festus is a desktop support technician intern at the City of Windhoek, and he's a master's candidate in cybersecurity at the University of Namibia. A very good afternoon to you, Festus, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
How are you, Ndapa? Hello, Namibia.
Hi. Of course, we're talking about your area of expertise. Let's put it like that, right?
Yes.
Cybersecurity, cyber threat events having been declined. That is according to the Communications Regulatory Authority of Namibia. Now, the first and overall question, I think, at this point that is coming into many people's mind, is Namibia safe? Can we say, okay, we are out of danger for now? Maybe we can breathe a little bit, or perhaps the statistics just show that we need to up our game even the more when it comes to cybersecurity. What's your opinion on that?
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but it would be highly dangerous for businesses to mistake the lower numbers as us being safe, because the numbers might be low, but the severity of those attacks might be higher. So fewer attacks, but more deadly. So we cannot let our guard down at all and think that we are in a safe environment now. Cyberspace is continuously evolving and just getting more dangerous as we move forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, talking about the decrease of such numbers, what could perhaps be one of the reasons or some of the reasons that cause such numbers to decline? I mean, for instance, cyber threats, cyber reported and detected cyber vulnerabilities. Is it that perhaps the awareness that is being made in regards to cyber threats, now, of course, to tighten and companies to tighten cybersecurity, is that perhaps that companies are really putting it into practice?
Yes, most companies are actually investing a lot in cybersecurity. Most companies have security operation centers that monitor this.
What's this? Mm-hmm.
So security controls are basically improving and being more widely adapted in businesses, which is why the threats are going down. Not the threats, but actually the vulnerabilities that exist within a business.
Right. Okay. Now, with the work that you do at the City of Endo, for instance, what are some of the things that you have picked up that perhaps you would want other perhaps companies or individuals to really look into when it comes to tightening of cybersecurity?
So City of Windhoek is very serious about cybersecurity education because, as the previous speaker has mentioned, that end users are mostly targeted for cyber attacks because it's...
Pastor, it seems like I'm losing you. Not so quite clear. Perhaps would you move a little bit?
Hello?
Okay. Okay, you can continue. Mm-hmm. Yes, you may continue.
We need a lot more strides when it comes to cybersecurity because of the education that they are imposing on the employees. They run occasionally running phishing simulations just to test the posture of security and also educating users continuously mm-hmm. so that they remain vigilant and aware of the threats that are out there.
Mm.
Yeah, so we occasionally get a lot of phishing simulation emails just to kind of gather information on which users and in which departments those users are that need more attention and more education.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Also, a 24/7 SOC is running here that continuously monitor the systems to make sure that the moment a threat is detected, it mm-hmm. is immediately addressed.
Interesting.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of companies have become awake about the incidents of cyber threat events that have happened in the past, and of course it places so many files or confidential files at risk, and therefore also could cost companies a lot of money, and it could only be wiser for them to really or it could only be wisdom from their end to actually invest in more cybersecurity, tighter measures of cybersecurity. Nonetheless, there has been an increase, or there has been an uprise in talks of cybersecurity degrees or programs in order to just enhance everybody's capability or awareness around the issue. And also, I've come to realize that the university, the Namibia University of Science and Technology has also released some courses that they do want its people to get into. Now, I want to hear from you, being somebody who's also pursuing cybersecurity master's degree. Why would you think this is important at this particular point in time, and why should we perhaps also raise an alarm for young people to partake and to participate and to actually learn about cyber related courses in order to help the country and the companies and even ourselves individually in future?
Okay, so these programs are very encouraging that they are increasing, and also the numbers of students that are actually pursuing cybersecurity are going up, because security is basically the responsibility of everybody nowadays. It's not just up for the IT departments anymore. So anybody right. who can get access to cybersecurity education, it will be of a great benefit to the companies or businesses they will end up working for, because we, the people, are now becoming the targets of these IT cybersecurity attacks. So the courses are encouraging, and they are also moving with the times, because they are becoming more advanced in the sense that they are incorporating AI to help defense systems. Mm-hmm. It's not just the same old courses that were around before. They are actually moving with the times, incorporating these AI systems to also greatly improve the effectiveness of a cybersecurity expert.
All right. Yeah. Festus, perhaps your last words in terms of cybersecurity awareness. Perhaps what if you're given the opportunity now to sound the alarm to the whole of Namibia, what is it that you would say to them?
So cybersecurity awareness is very important. And what's also important is giving this awareness without victim blaming. What happens is most of these victims of phishing attacks are afraid to be blamed for causing an attack. So they are less likely to report attacks or incidents immediately when they occur. And this leads to incidents not being discovered as soon as they occur. So if we can just educate the people in a way that doesn't blame them and encouraging them to come forward, that's my word, actually.
Okay. Festus, yeah. Thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis. It's been a pleasure engaging you. Definitely wish to engage with you more in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay.
All right.
Bye. And with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is on the Reading News Analysis. To stay tuned for more.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida. Ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo. Iho etike kovano hile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special. Tashia kengeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamoili nawa ninge kwata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko mberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu omafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now in other news, the National Youth Council of Namibia has convened its third General Assembly at the Swakopmund Multipurpose Center, bringing together youth leaders, delegates, policymakers, and stakeholders from across the country to deliberate on the future of youth representation and governance in Namibia. Held under the theme, Repositioning the National Youth Council for Effective, Responsive and Accountable Youth Governance, the four-day assembly runs from the 19th to the 22nd of June 2026 and serves as one of the council's most important decision-making platforms. Now, the gathering comes at a time when Namibia's youth continue to face challenges related to unemployment, skills development, access to opportunities and meaningful participation in national development processes. Delegates are expected to review the council's performance, assess existing governance structures, and explore reforms aimed at strengthening the institution's capacity to advocate for and represent young people more effectively. Now, the General Assembly provides a platform for young organizations and regional representatives to engage in policy discussions, share experiences, and formulate recommendations that can contribute to improved youth empowerment and inclusion. Now, key discussions are expected to focus on accountability, accountability on institutional effectiveness, leadership development, youth participation in decision-making, and strategies to enhance the council's responsiveness to emerging youth issues. And let's now take a listen. Let's now take a listen to Patience Masuer, who is the interim National Youth Council Executive Chairperson.
Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture, Mr. Tembwe, Ms. Unombwiro Kalteda, Auditor at a Democratic and an Inclusive General Assembly. And that is what we are going to deliver. And an Inclusive General Assembly. And that is what we are going to deliver here. Many people expected miracles when they appointed us. And what many people underestimated was just the scale of the challenge that we found when we came to the NYC. And the NYC is a very important institution. The NYC is the voice of young people in Namibia. But when we assumed office and we met in Otjiwarongo, we met in Gobabis, we met at Gateway Center, and we were very honest about the situation that we found the NYC in. We found an institution that needed urgent attention. We found an institution that did not produce audits for 6 years. We found an institution that never laid an annual report on the floor of Parliament. We found an institution with policies that were never approved. We found compliance obligations that had accumulated over years. We found strained relationships between the institution and many of its stakeholders, with some stakeholders still asking us today, but what is it that the NYC actually does? What is your job? And we found an institution ultimately that needed to rebuild confidence within itself. And so the task ultimately was not only institutional, but in many respects, it was deeply human, because the NYC is tasked with serving north of 70% of our population. And I can say without hesitation that this was probably in my very short early career, I'm 27 years old, one of the most difficult periods of my personal and professional life. And not simply because of the workload, not because of the long hours, not because of the weight of the responsibility, because the decisions before us were really straightforward. We were required to navigate difficult negotiations. And we've had to serve multiple stakeholders that had different expectations and different interests. We had to make governance decisions that were sometimes unpopular, but necessary. 2024 restructuring. Taking a decision in Otjiwarongo, where we had to sit with two sets of regional chairpersons where both groups legitimately feel that they are entitled to the office. And we had to sit during those meetings, make difficult, differing decisions in the meetings leading up to that. But that was necessary for us to move this institution forward. And we had to undertake organizational reforms. We had to restructure the organization. And at the same time, we had to appreciate that every decision that we took affected real people. And it affected real people's lives. Not always positively, sometimes very negatively. And so, during some moments, progress seemed like it was frustratingly slow. But through it all, the interim board remained guided by the simple belief that this institution is too important for us not to perform. And we had to fight for this institution. So with every discussion, every meeting, every decision, there was one important constituency that stood before us. And that is the young people of Namibia. So this weekend we gather under the theme Repositioning the National Youth Council for Effective, Responsive and Accountable Youth Governance. We have really an opportunity, colleagues, this weekend to reflect not only where this institution comes from, but to really determine where we are taking the NYC. Repositioning is not only about electing new leaders. It's not only about adopting resolutions. It is about building institutions and building an NYC that is stronger than the individuals who lead the NYC. It is about creating and inculcating a culture of accountability for every person that serves the NYC and that benefits from the NYC. It is about ensuring that the National Youth Council is responsive to the needs and the aspirations of the young people across all 14 regions of our country and across all 121 constituencies that we are mandated to serve. And we must build an institution that future generations can trust. And delegates, the significance of this General Assembly we cannot overstate. The Assembly represents a culmination of an institutional renewal process that began 9 months ago on the 2nd of October 2025. It represents the successful completion of the final and most important responsibility that was entrusted to this interim board. Over this weekend, the youth of Namibia will claim and reclaim ownership of their institution through democratic participation. As delegates, all of us collectively shall deliberate on the future direction of the council, and we shall also elect the new leadership of the council. And after the successful GA, the National Youth Council begins a new chapter. In conclusion, to those who will be elected to lead this institution, on behalf of the interim board, the board offers you this message. Number one, guard this institution carefully. Protect the NYC's integrity fiercely. Never place personalities above principles. Number four, never place positions above purpose. And never forget that the leadership within the National Youth Council is not about status, it is about service. The young people of Namibia deserve better. The young people of Namibia deserve better than the interim board. The young people of Namibia deserve leaders who are accountable. The NYC deserves leaders who are ethical. As young people, we deserve leaders who are prepared to make difficult decisions, not in the interests of themselves, but in the interests of the NYC. We deserve an NYC with leaders that understand that the National Youth Council does not belong to a few individuals. The National Youth Council belongs to every young person that it is mandated to serve. Honorable Minister, allow me at this juncture to, on behalf of the interim board, thank you for the confidence that you placed in us when you entrusted us with this responsibility. Your support, your guidance, your commitment to strengthening youth governance have been the center throughout this process. To my fellow members of the interim board, I want to thank you, most importantly, for your professionalism, for your dedication. The work was difficult, but your commitment was never questioned. To the management and to the staff, I want to thank you sincerely for going into the trenches and for your resilience during a period of significant transition. And to the affiliates and the delegates here today, thank you for your patience. Thank you for your engagement. Thank you for your criticism during the difficult meetings that we had. And thank you, most importantly.
Patience Musuwa speaking about quite interesting challenges that they found there at the NYC. And always give my appreciation to anybody that is bold to speak about the truth that is happening, especially at our public institutions, that sometimes you wouldn't even think would be happening. But nonetheless, let's take a listen to the Minister of Education, Sanet Steenkamp, on what her contributions were.
Pay attention. But if I'm to be very honest with you, thank you. Please, with solicitation, I do not mean to exclude anybody. Ms. Maswau was making reference to the instability, the compliance obligations that it could not meet. And ultimately, I was worried about whether it could still do the one thing that the NYC exists to do, to serve the young people of Namibia. Because this is not just another institution. This council belongs to you. It is your voice given legal form. It is the place where the hopes, the frustrations, the dreams, the ideas and the energy of our youth are meant to be heard. So when it falters, I do not treat that lightly, and I never have. However, today I'm standing here with you with a deep sense and a real sense of relief, but also of pride. You can give another one a proper omake. This General Assembly has been a long time coming. I will not pretend otherwise this morning, because the young people in this hall know this institution's recent history better than most of us standing on the stage, especially myself. What I know is what I learned with time and through in-depth reading. Many of you have experienced it. The interim board was appointed during one of the hardest chapters in this council's history, and they inherited an institution under real strain, with serious governance and operational problems. And they were given a mandate, as was explained by the acting EC, that was narrow on purpose and urgent on purpose. They could have been overwhelmed and pack up and leave, but they didn't. Instead, they got to work. Over the past 9 months, they restored order, but they also did more than that. They strengthened governance. They improved accountability and addressed compliance matters that has gone unresolved for many years. And most importantly, they guided this council back to its democratic foundations. And what we are gathered for today is the final step in completing that work. I want to thank them properly, and I ask your patience as I do this by name, because they earned it. And this time I want you to step forward to stand here, right here in front. Madame Patience Masua, the acting executive chair lady, ladies and gentlemen. Ms. Ialo Shimi, may I kindly ask you to step forward. Always listening intently and guiding, putting emphasis on the facts and the things that really had to be done. May God continue to bless your work beyond the interim board that will be dissolved during this period. And may you know that you can only go from strength to strength, and that you are making us immensely proud. Thank you very much. Thank you. You will elect new leadership, an executive chairperson and a board. And I want to be honest with you about what that moment really is, because you deserve honesty, not a polished version of events. This election will be competitive. Different affiliates, different histories, different ambitions, all in one room. That is not a weakness in this assembly. That is democracy doing what it is supposed to do. Contest is healthy, and competition done with the right level of integrity is how you found out who your strongest leaders really are. But hear me clearly, there's a difference between competition and division, and there's a difference between ambition and entitlement. And I'm using the word entitlement for a reason. None of you are here to tear each other down so that one affiliate can claim a victory. You are here to compete for the right to serve. And that word, serve, has to sit at the center of everything that happens in this hall over the coming days. Whoever is elected as executive chairperson, whoever sits on...
A commercial break now.
Efiloshisho otali kulandula kona ave wayuka. Ekwashilipale kolo marwendo paiwano kupitila mo NHB. Watupatele komesho kwashilipale kolo afika mafio pedola emiliona omulongo danamibia. Moshi joshe tukeshe kuyanja omakwafo unamiti enashane filoshisho lopa ulumo mumbu. Kwa avoveli ponje yoshilongo, shijoshi topo washo ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe banando isho shelayash. Opo umone ya kulolo polis maule ominute disho naelela, lishangifako nhp.com.na omanga ino ya morwendo ponje yoshilongo. E mangono malandula fano, odo dino kulandurwa. NHP, rotate in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
On that board, must walk out here remembering one thing. That position does not belong to you. It is Yalp in trust. And I'm very serious when I say that. There will be no person or individual bigger than the institution. We don't have room for egos. You will be stewards for a season on behalf of every young Namibian who is not in this room. The ones studying by candlelight, wherever they might be, the youth who felt unheard, and even those who have never used the word affiliate in their lives, but whose future this council exists to serve. So I'm asking three things of you. Compete hard, but do it in a manner that is clean, respectful, and filled with integrity. You still want to have a life beyond the 4 years. And none of you want to be used for something. None of you want to be used for something that is not done in the light and for the right and intended purpose. I want to say whoever wins and whoever does not, leave this as General Assembly as one council and not as wounded factions. I want you to take the sessions that will follow seriously, because leadership without skill is just performance, and skill without leadership will be wasted potential for our youth. Think beyond this room. Think about the jobs. Think about innovation, about the creative industry. Think about sports. Think about youth. And this must actually lead us somewhere, so that every young Namibian who needs you, looking outwards, knowing that you're not just focusing on the upward, but you're looking broader for everyone out there. So for whatever happens in this General Assembly over the coming days, please be aware that this will shape the kind of institution the National Youth Council becomes for the next 4 years. I trust that you understand the weight behind that and that you will carry it with the seriousness it deserves. You will hear with the presentations that will be made, and you will see how far we have come. And nothing and nobody will break down what we all have worked so hard for. Now it is time to just embrace that. Having shared where this institution has come from, I now wish to allow, wish you to allow me to introduce our keynote speaker. I don't know how you feel, but we are absolutely delighted that our esteemed Excellency, Madame Lucia Witbooi, our Vice President of the Republic of Namibia.
Okay, now let's pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshuala konongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamwili nawa ninge Pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora esatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And now let's cross over to news beyond the borders of Namibia, let's start off in South Africa, where there is an inter-ministerial committee on migration visiting the Ndela Repatriation Center.
Inter-Ministerial Committee on Migration, chaired by Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development, that's Mamoloko Kubayi, is visiting the Lindela Repatriation Center in Krugersdorp. SABC News reporter Lopang Alamo is in Krugersdorp and joins us live with the very latest. A very good morning to you, Lopang. So the minister today is on a site visit specifically at the repatriation center. What exactly brings her there? What is she looking to perhaps observe or inquire about?
Mfundo, a very good morning and to our viewers as well. We're currently in Krugersdorp at the Lindela Repatriation Center. Now, the minister has just left the center, as well as the acting police minister, Feroz Kachalia. They were basically coming here to do a walkabout and inspection of the center. And we really did not see much. We went through some of the sleeping areas, your common areas as well. And one of the biggest issues that we actually spoke to the minister about is regarding the capacity of the migrants who are currently at the center. Quite a number of them, we understand that yesterday alone, excuse me, about 800 of those who are awaiting deportation were brought to the center. But how many of them leave the center after 48 hours? The process is that they are brought here after having been sentenced, just basically awaiting deportation. What we do know is that they're supposed to be here for about 48 hours and then go back to their countries of origin. However, we found that a number of these migrants have been at the center for a very long time. One man we spoke to has been here for the past 3 months or so, and he had a lot of complaints regarding the facility. However, his biggest gripe was with his government. Now, he's from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and he expressed that he hasn't received much support from his government. He's been trying to get in touch. He's been trying to get assistance. He said that his visa expired. He was then brought to the center to await deportation. However, he's yet to leave the country. Now, he says he wants to return to South Africa. We also did inquire whether or not he was coming into the country legally so, and he did express that he had a visa that expired about 4 months ago, and that's what he's trying to sort out. However, what we did see was really an issue of trying to establish whether or not Lindela Repatriation Center is able to accommodate the number of people who come here on a daily basis. And security is tight. It seems as though most of the facilities are in good condition, or decent condition rather. Another issue that we try to bring up is relating to these anti-immigration, anti-illegal immigration marches and discourse that has been taking place in South Africa and around. What we do know is that the minister is saying that South Africa really is a democratic country, and the people of South Africa are entitled to march to their satisfaction. However, he just urged that come such marches, they should then be in touch with police as well as officials from Home Affairs to conduct these marches to ensure that no one is on the wrong side of the law. Speaking of the law, the number of people who are actually awaiting to go to court and see lawyers here, a number of them, quite a long line. And another thing we noticed, quite a number of these people are actually male. We did see in the center that there's a section for women, and there's also another section where those who are awaiting deportation are male. And we saw a number of them being male, and some of them saying they have families in South Africa as well, that they're married to South African women, and that they do somewhat have a right to be here. However, Home Affairs has now full control of the center, and it seems as though no major incidents have been reported. I think about 2 years ago or so, we do know that about 69 or 70 of some of the migrants who were in the center found a way to escape, and as things stand, they were not yet found, and that's just really one of the issues that have been raised here. Now, Lindela, the repatriation center is not a refugee center. South Africa does not have refugee centers. However, this center has a number of people who come from other provinces, and they're then brought here. And that is what this visit was, to basically ensure if the conditions are okay for the migrants to be here, to reside here as well. The most concerning is the lack of communication, from what the minister says, the lack of communication from other countries who claim that they do not have communication from.
And right now, we call up, since it's Friday, we call up our lucky winners for this Friday for the 500 ShopRite YouSave gift voucher. Now, like I always say, please stay close to your telephone, and obviously stay close to the radio, or perhaps you're listening through our social media platforms, to stay close by just to find out if you are the lucky winner. Good afternoon.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Happy calling you from Eagle FM. You are currently live on E.
Okay.
Yes. Anything you see or do can be used against you in the court of law.
Aye.
Okay. I'm calling you to inform you that you are this Friday's lucky winner of the 500.
I'm the winner.
I love that excitement.
Oh my God. Well, okay.
You know, if it was up to me, I would say, please let her be a lucky winner again and again and again. But the system has to choose you.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Did you ever think about it, that perhaps I could be the lucky winner?
No.
No?
I didn't. I even thought maybe people are already done.
No. This competition has been up since last year and it's still ongoing till this year. So, yes.
And now today I was like, let me try my luck, but I didn't really like put an effort, like maybe I will not be the winner so long.
Yeah. See, those things that you're sometimes so really reluctant about. And it's still middle of the month anyway, so yeah. Anyway, who am I speaking to? What's your name?
Oh, Fina.
Fina, what's your surname?
Shilolo.
Shilolo, from where are you?
I'm in Iringa.
Ah, the capital city.
Yes.
Congratulations, Fina.
Thank you very much.
Okay. The team will definitely get hold of you too, so they can inform you how you can pick up your gift voucher.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You just never know. You could be the next lucky winner. I tell you, all you have to do is follow the instructions, answer the questions as put out for you. And you never know. You could just be the lucky winner. Always try your luck. And you could be smiling on your way to ShopRite or perhaps a Usave nearby you to do your grocery shopping. And are we calling up someone again so we can give them the good news? Hopefully they actually pick up. Hello, a very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Hi, this is Happy calling you from Eagle FM.
Yes.
You're currently live on radio.
Hello, yes.
Yes. Don't whisper, speak louder. I am calling to inform you that you are part of this Friday's lucky winner of the ShopRite, 500 ShopRite Usave gift voucher.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh.
Okay.
Who am I speaking to?
Jennifer.
Eliphaz?
Jennifer.
Jennifer.
Yes, Jennifer.
Okay. What's your surname?
Kutsia.
Where are you from?
From Bandung.
Okay. Congratulations. How do you feel?
Oh, I feel very, very
Did you expect anything of this kind?
I don't know. I was just taking part. I thought maybe I won, but...
Yeah,
but,
and now that thought came true, huh?
Yes, luck came to my...
Congratulations, Jennifer.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Oh, by the way, the team will definitely get hold of you to inform you on how and where you can pick up a gift voucher.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay,
Bye. Okay. And since today we are being very generous, you never know. You might be the third lucky winner. Make sure you never miss the space on the radar Fridays this time around to find out if you are the lucky winner for the ShopRite Usave gift voucher. Anyway, we're calling up our third person. Let's hope they are gonna pick up. Good afternoon, hello.
Yes, afternoon.
Hi, why do you sound so down?
It's kind of cold.
Do you need some coffee, perhaps?
Yeah.
Do you think you have enough coffee and sugar at home? For tea, for the...
Not for this weather. So I need some more.
You need some more, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm here. I'm calling. Yeah. This is Happy calling you from Eagle FM.
Yes.
You're currently live on radio.
Okay.
But I'm calling to inform you that you are one of the lucky winners of this Friday's 500 ShopRite Usave gift voucher.
Yes.
But you don't sound very excited now that you're going to get more money to buy coffee.
Yes, I will. And I'm really thankful for that.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay. Hopefully you get to buy yourself some coffee and then you don't have to be so down and so cold, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Congratulations. Yeah. Who am I speaking to? What's your name?
Thank Erastus Angola.
Oh, Erastus Angola. Where are you from, Erastus?
I'm currently in Windhoek, Black Battle.
Oh, okay. Looks like everybody's from Windhoek today, huh? Brakwater. Oh. You stay in Brakwater?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Erastus, congratulations. I will, my team will call you up to inform you where and how you can pick up your gift voucher. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
To the EGFM team and other stakeholders.
Okay. Thank you so much, Erastus.
Welcome, ma'am.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, and there you had it. Who knows, next time you perhaps are the lucky winner for the ShopRite YouSave gift voucher. Nonetheless, let's get back to news and let's go back to South Africa, cross the border over to South Africa and listen to Durban's Tourism Business Awards as diversity and community development.
The Durban Tourism Business Awards are currently underway at the Durban ICC. The awards are a celebration of businesses and individuals who deliver excellence in Durban tourism. We're crossing now live to Trends Live presenter Letisi Sindane, who is at the Durban ICC with the Deputy Mayor Zandile Mnyeni. What can you tell us about the latest at those awards, Letisi?
Oh yes, Oliver, we are live at the Durban ICC for the Durban Tourism Business Awards 2026, celebrating 5 incredible years. It's been half a decade since these awards were commissioned by the eThekwini Municipality, and let me tell you, they have been growing strong. The emotions are high, the excitement is through the roof. Some of the awards have been given out this evening, and I can tell you that some of the winners, in fact, all of the winners, the number one prize have been walking away with 50,000 rand. I'm standing by now with the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Zandile Mnyeni, to chat a bit more about the evening festivities and, you know, just to find out where they are at and how they are feeling through this prestigious night. Deputy Mayor, good evening. Thank you so much for chatting to us. Let's chat about the Durban Tourism Business Awards, right? They are celebrating a significant milestone this year. What does this achievement mean for the city and the tourism sector?
Thank you for the opportunity. As eThekwini Municipality, we are very delighted that today we are here because it's in line with our vision. Our vision that talks about taking eThekwini Municipality to the world-class tourism destination. We are here today. It's not just a award, but it's also an opportunity even for the international tourist to see what eThekwini is all about. And it's also part of saying that let us invest more in tourism, because when we look at how as a city we can make it a point that the issue of unemployment, we change the numbers. We believe that through the tourism we can invest in making sure that especially young people, when you look at the statistics, are the ones who are mostly affected. But we are also saying that we are celebrating the collaboration of government and also the private sector, because when we say the government cannot do it alone, we mean that this partnership will yield result in a manner that makes us to have more projects that our people, especially the residents of eThekwini, they will also say we are proud to be a Durbanite.
Oh, it's celebrations indeed, and it is inspiring because, yes, the unemployment statistic is through the roof, and it's truly commendable, the work that you are doing. I want to find out now, as Deputy Mayor of the eThekwini Municipality, how do you see the role of tourism driving economic growth and community development within the Durban and wider region?
I believe that tourism is one of those sectors that when we're talking about how many people benefit, we are saying that one tourist that comes to the city, more than 10 people can get employment. When we're talking about employment, we are not only looking at employment, but we are also saying the issues of skills. Because when we are saying that, it's the high time that we accelerate in making sure that SMMEs, entrepreneurship, they grow. We are also saying that it's important when we're talking about other places, because as the city, we are not only competing in South Africa, but we are competing internationally. We are saying that it's also create a platform that will make us also to get a lot of international tourists. When we look at where we come from during the COVID, we can safely say eThekwini, we are moving in terms of numbers. We are now attracting more because of such awards that makes people to look at us in a different way, to say, I am planning to come to South Africa, eThekwini is the place that I should go to.
Oh, and you know what they say, no DNA, just RSA, and now just Durban SA.
Yes, yes, the warmest city. We are in winter.
Oh, yes, and it's definitely summer.
When you come to our city, you will feel it in the morning.
I feel it every day.
In the day, you will go to the beach. Yes.
We love it. Deputy Mayor, talk to us about the plans and the initiatives that you have as a municipality in place to support local tourism businesses and to ensure that Durban remains a top destination, like you said, even for people outside of South Africa.
One of the things that we pride ourselves with as a city is to create a platform where we say, whether you are now the giant in the industry, whether you are still a tour guide, come to us. Let us have a conversation. Let us look at the opportunities. Through our department, which is called Economic Development, we have organized many seminars. And through those seminars, we are happy that we have nurtured some of the people who are now trying to enter the industry. We have also made people to collaborate in terms of joint ventures in the business, because we always preach this. You cannot do it alone. And we are happy that when we are talking about that, we are also looking at expanding in the township economy, because we believe that our beautiful city is not only about CBD, but it's also about people going out to our township to experience what is it like to be at Umlazi, what is it like to be at Kwamash, making sure that at the end of the day, people understand and they know the dynamic of this city. Because we also pride ourselves that when we're talking about our city, even in terms of culture, religion, we are very diverse. So hence, we always say, let us market every corner of our city so that tourists, they will come to our city from different areas.
Oh, you heard it there yourself. That is the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Zandi Lemnyeni of the eThekwini Municipality, live at the Durban ICC, celebrating, of course, the Durban Tourism Business Awards. Oliver, I'm going to hand it back to you. The excitement is still going on inside. We're taking pictures at the back, and I can promise you that it is.
And now let's hear on some health news. The vaccine says to be preventing the deadly cancer, human papilloma virus vaccine.
It's not often we get to have really positive news stories like this one around cancer.
HPV vaccination works and saves lives.
Statistics are now proving the facts.
I've got girls, my eldest has had hers and my second one will be having it, so it's really important. I would definitely encourage everyone to accept that.
It is a vaccine that can prevent cancer in the future. Why wouldn't you have it?
It is a medical breakthrough, a vaccine that is gradually eliminating a deadly cancer. The number of young women dying from cervical cancer has plummeted in England following the rollout of the HPV vaccine. We're going to tell you why it is making such an impact and whether this type of vaccine could revolutionise cancer care. So the basics. HPV stands for human papillomavirus, a common group of viruses which can lead to serious health problems. There is a vaccine for this, and now landmark research shows that cervical cancer deaths have fallen sharply since that vaccine started being given to school-aged girls. Here are some of the key findings of that report.
For the first time on record, between 2020 and 2024, no women in their early 20s died of cervical cancer. And women below the age of 30 had an almost zero risk of death. Experts say around 200 lives have been saved as a direct result of the vaccine.
Kath Burns is our health expert. So, Kath, let's start with some of the fundamental questions. First of all, what is HPV?
Well, we talk about it as a virus. It's actually a group of about 100 viruses. They're very common. They are very contagious. Most of us will have had them at some point and probably not even noticed because it often goes away without causing any issues. But sometimes it can cause abnormal cell changes that years later could go on to cause cancer, like cervical cancer. In terms of how you catch it, it's really easy to catch. You can get it from sex, but it doesn't just have to be sex. It can be any kind of close skin-to-skin contact with your genitals or from sharing things like sex toys. Condoms do help, but because they don't entirely cover that area, they don't entirely protect against it.
And can you tell us a little bit more about the vaccine? Who exactly can get it? How does it work?
So schoolgirls in the UK have been offered it since 2008. Essentially, it stops cancer before it starts. Boys have been offered it since 2019, and it helps protect them against anal, penis, throat and mouth cancer, as well as stopping them from passing on the HPV virus. It's offered essentially to all school children, secondary school children aged 11 to 13 in the UK. And if you've missed your vaccine, you can go and get it from your GP up to the age of 25.
Well, Kath, stay with us. Let's turn now to one of the consequences of the HPV virus, cervical cancer, which is the fourth most common cancer in women globally. Well, on the right, you can see Alexandra Legg. She left school just before the HPV vaccine was introduced in England. In 2021, she was diagnosed with cervical cancer, aged 30. She underwent intensive treatment, although surgeons were able to preserve a small part of her cervix. Just a year later, her daughter, Ivy, was born. Alexandra is now an advocate for the vaccine.
I just remember hearing the words and everything went through my head. It was just, yeah, it was so hard, but at the same time, I knew something wasn't right. So it was such a shock, but knowing something wasn't right, it just answered all of my questions and fears that I had. I'm a real advocate for this vaccine because statistics are now proving the facts. Smear tests now specifically look for HPV to reduce the risk. And I know when Ivy is old enough, I will be taking her. She will be first in the queue. I'm not letting her not have this.
So, Kath, can you tell us a bit more about cervical cancer?
And we have come to the conclusion after this episode of On The Radar News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkonada Dingi program brought to you by Penambico Journalists. From Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. And if you want to continue to listen to the sound of my voice, please do tune in tomorrow, Saturday, 1900 hours to 2100 hours for an insightful conversation. From Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. Have yourself a great weekend.